All right, then. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is June 20th, 2018. Welcome to Bicycle Talk, this week without my lovely co-host, the Fran Storch, who is out riding her bicycle on the Cape. I'll talk about that in a minute. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show, you can't call me today because I don't have anyone to answer the phone, so we're going to pass on that. But you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Or if you're listening to this on a podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com, and you can visit and comment on Bicycle Talk on Facebook. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. Starting out with Ron's rant of the week. Oh, this is a sensitive subject that I just hear it far too much, and it's really starting to bother me. I posted it on the Facebook page to see if anybody wanted to comment on it. Here it is. People who are in fear of riding their bicycles on the roads. So my question is, what's the answer and what can we do about it? First of all, you know, I know this sounds crazy, and I know it sounds like, boy, that doesn't make me comfortable and settled about it. But what you really need to do is you need to get out and ride your bicycle on the road. The more people we have out riding their bicycles on the road, the safer the roads will become, because there will be a point where there's enough people out riding their bicycles on the road where things are going to have to change. People are going to have to pay more attention when they're driving their behemoth vehicles. And, you know, things will get better. They really will. But if you run away in fear and you go hide and don't ride your bicycle out on the road, and you decide that the road is no longer for you and you're just going to go find a trail to ride on, that's exactly what the motorized vehicle operator wants. That's exactly what the automobile industry wants. That's exactly what the oil industry wants. They don't want you there. And so, therefore, if they can instill enough fear in you, then you will not want to ride your bike on the road. So don't fall for it, okay? What is the answer? What can we do about it? That's my solution. Get out and ride your bike more. So, anyway, further discussion you can find on Facebook if you go to the Bicycle Talk page. And the question is, So I want you to comment on whether you're in fear of riding your bike on the road, and what's your concern and what's your answer. On a positive side, co-host Fran is out on the Cape. Yeah, Franny's out riding her bike. She's doing an annual ride that she does every year, an 86-mile ride from Plymouth, Massachusetts to Provincetown, Massachusetts, which basically involves riding down to the bridge from Plymouth and crossing over a ridiculously narrow bridge with no bike path on it, so you actually have to walk your bicycle on the sidewalk. And believe me, you want to walk your bike on the sidewalk on this bridge. It's ridiculously busy. Little shout out to Massachusetts. Hey, how about a bike path over the canal? That might be a nice little thing, huh? All right. Anyway, I said it. I asked for it. Let's see if we get any response. Also, I would like to bring out on a positive side our good friends from Nerac Earth Cycling Club. They are putting on their annual Seven Lakes bike ride this weekend, Sunday, June 24th. It's a rain or shine event. The registration's between 7 and 9:30 a.m. The start time's 62 miles at 8 a.m., 45 miles at 8:30, 25 miles at 9, and 20 miles at 9:30. You can find out more about this event by going to sevenlakeside.com. Go check it out. See what you think. They'll show you some really cool roads up here in northeastern Connecticut. They're a great group of people. We really love them. They're very friendly, good cycling folks. The maintenance minute. All right. So kick off your shoes and grab some sponges. It's time to get that bike shower fresh. It only takes a few minutes of sudsing once or twice a month to keep your machine running smoothly, which ultimately keeps your components lasting longer and requires less maintenance. So I am going to talk about just a little bit about how to wash your bike like a pro. All right. So this, I will give some credit here to Bicycling Magazine. They had a nice little article about this. I think it's very nice. Here's what you're going to need. You're going to round up some everyday household cleaner items to take care of your bike. We need some clean shop rags, old cotton t-shirts, whatever you might have there. They recommend a dummy axle, which you can put into the rear wheel, which is kind of a cool thing because it supports the chain and all that. Scrub brushes, a bucket, repair stand, or even a taut clothesline. If you don't have anything to hold your bike up on, you need something just to support underneath the seat so you can hold it up. A garden hose with a trigger style spray nozzle. Be careful with that. I'll talk to you about that in a minute too. Chain loop, two-sided abrasive sponges, and dish detergent. And you fill up a couple of clean buckets with water and a generous squirt of the dish soap. The person who wrote this says he likes Dawn Ultra, and it's probably because it has petroleum products in it and it helps cut some of the grease. But that's a little dishwashing dish soap plug for a, you know, the idea that our dish soap that's out there unfortunately does cover it has petroleum products in it. So if you're not really big on petroleum products, be careful about what you wash your dishes with. Anyway, side note. So you want to place your bike in the work stand or hook it up on that clothesline if you want. This brings it up and off the ground and makes the nooks and crannies easier to reach. And so you want to remove your wheels and insert a dummy axle or what we call a chain keeper. They also sell chain keepers if you're looking for something like that. You go to your local bike shop and say, hey, I need one of those funny little things that go on your rear wheel. So when you take your wheel off, it'll hold my chain up. It's called a chain keeper. And they'll know what you're talking about if you ask for a chain keeper. And they can either sell you one at the bicycle shop or they can order one for you. But it's kind of a cool thing. If your chain is pretty grimy, you want to rinse the frame and rinse down the components. And if the chain is still grimy, add small drops of that. I don't like that dish soap thing. Like you would lube, grip the chain on the rough side with your sponge and then turn the cranks for several rotations. Let this sit for 5 minutes and rinse. I prefer to use, when I'm working with the chain, my preference is not to use anything like soapy water. And what I like to do instead is I will use those rags that we were talking about earlier, and I'll take a little bit of the lube that I'm actually going to lube my chain with. I particularly like an oil-based lube, that petroleum-based lube, because I think it lasts longer, and there's a lot of great products out there. But you can also use something else like that. But I like to use the lube to actually put it on the rag, and then I run my chain around, you know, crank it around a few times on the lubed rag and use that to kind of wipe off some of the extra, because there is a certain amount of solvent in that lube, which helps the lube penetrate and get into the chain. And you can do that a few times. You want to make sure that chain's pretty clean. I really, even if you have to lube the chain completely and then wipe it down with the rag and then relube it, that's kind of what I like to do. If you scrub your derailleurs, your chain and chain rings with a stiff bristle brush, that works pretty good. I also have found that you can use a heavier stainless steel wool, basically, is what it is. You can find it in grocery stores. You can find it for, you know, scrubbing pots, that sort of thing. But a heavier one, and you just use that, and that really cleans up a lot when you're working on the chain. Don't use it on your frame. It's going to scratch the frame. Don't use it on your components. It might scratch the components. But on the chain, it works really good. So you can use that too. And then you say, after you've washed down the whole bike, you just kind of clean it all off with a soft sponge, and you soap up the frame a little bit more and then work your way from the front to the back. So you want to be methodical so you remember that what you've done too. And then you rinse, you clean the brake calipers, the bottom bracket dropouts under the fork, clean the brake pads, and again, rinse the frame with a light spray. And the key here on light spray, and that's something I wanted to touch on too. If you're using a garden hose, if you're using a hose of any kind, because you have the ability to do that, you want to, when he says light spray, he means light spray. You don't want to be forcing water into any of the bearing surfaces. Very, very bad idea. You grab that rear wheel. You can use a little bit. He says dish soap on the cassette. Not real big on that, but I'll use another type of solvent on there, and then I will clean that out real good. There's a great product made by the Park Tool Company also that can get in between your cogs in the back, and it'll actually clean that out. Again, your local bike shop knows what this is because they use them all the time, so they're really cool, and they fit between the gears in the back, so that's kind of a cool thing. And you want to wipe everything down really good. Your rims will probably have some residue on them. I will use soapy water on my rims and on my tires. So definitely do that and wipe all the way around and then dry them off really good before I put everything back together. Or you can let it air dry in the sun. You can do that too. And then re-lube the chain one more time before you you put everything back together again. And then put it all back together again. Take a look. If you had a little extra time and you wanted to put a little bit of wax on the frame to make it look a little shinier and cleaner, and also help keep some of the crud off for later on, that's kind of a cool idea too. You can do that. So that's a neat thing. So anyway, that's my maintenance minute, how to clean your bike like a pro. And, you know, if it, a clean bike is a pretty bike, is a happy bike. And it also, if you keep it clean enough, then you don't end up with the infamous Cat 5 tattoo. Anybody out there doesn't know what that is? It is when you somehow lean your greasy chain and chain ring up against your leg, and then you get a lovely little stain on your leg. Yeah, it's called a Cat 5 tattoo. It's kind of a bogus thing. But anyway, there it is. I wanted to talk a little bit about a person in history by the name of Major Taylor. Major Taylor was a very interesting person. I'm going to give you a whole bio here. This is kind of a biography at a glance. You can find out about this by going to the MajorTaylorAssociation.org, and you can find out all sorts of cool things about Major Taylor. So anyway, on November 26, 1878, Marshall W. Taylor was born in rural Indiana to a black couple who moved north from Kentucky around the time of the Civil War. And Taylor was raised and educated in the home of a wealthy white Indianapolis family that employed his father as a coachman. The family gives him a bicycle. In 1892, Taylor was hired to perform cycling stunts outside of an Indianapolis bike shop. His costume is a soldier's uniform, which earns him the nickname Major. He wins his first bike race that year, 1892. In fall of 1895, Taylor moved to Worcester, Massachusetts, with his employer and racing manager, Louis Birdie Munger, who plans to open a bicycle factory there. August of 1896, Taylor unofficially breaks a world record, a world track record in Indianapolis, but his feat offends white sensibilities, and he is banned from Indy's capital city track. Great, huh? Boy, oh boy. Anyway, December 1896, Taylor finishes 8th in his first professional bicycle race, a 6-day endurance event at the Madison Square Garden in New York. 1898, Taylor holds 7 world records, including a 1-mile paced standing start, 1 minute 41 seconds. In August of 1899, August 10th, 1899, Taylor wins the World 1-Mile Championship in Montreal, defeating Boston rival Tom Butler. Taylor is the second black world champion athlete after bantamweight boxer George Dixon's title fights 1890 through 91. In November 15th of 1899, Taylor knocks the 1-mile record down to 1:19. And in September of 1900, thwarted by in previous seasons by racism, Taylor finally gets to compete the National Championship Series and becomes the American Sprint Champion. October 1900 through January of 1901, Taylor performs in a vaudeville act with Charles Mile a Minute Murphy, racing on rollers on theater stages across Massachusetts. March to June of 1901, Taylor competes in Europe, which he had long resisted because his Baptist beliefs precluded racing on Sundays. He beats every European champion. March 21st, 1902, Taylor marries Daisy V. Morris in Ansonia, Connecticut. 1902 to 1904, Taylor races all over Europe, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States with brief rests in Worcester. 1907, Taylor makes a brief comeback after a two-year hiatus. 1910, Taylor retires from racing at the age of 32. Gosh, he was really young. Over the next two decades, unsuccessful business ventures and illness sap his fortune. In 1930, impoverished and estranged from his wife, Taylor drives to Chicago, stays at the YMCA, and tries to sell copies of his self-published 1928 autobiography, The Fastest Bicycle Rider in the World. June 21st, 1932, Taylor died at age 53 in the charity ward of Cook County Hospital in Chicago, and he's buried in an unmarked grave. And on May 23rd, 1948, a group of former bike racers, pro bike racers, with money donated by the Schwinn Bicycle Company, owner Frank Schwinn, has Taylor's remains exhumed and reburied in a more prominent part of Mount Glenwood Cemetery in Illinois. So a little bit about Major Taylor. One of the reasons I'm bringing it up is because every year up in Worcester, there is an event, and the event is a bicycle race, and it is called the George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. It's on the corner of Main and George Streets in Worcester, Mass. It'll be, and I know this is an event, and it's usually at the end of my show, but it all goes along with the story. It's at 10 a.m. on July 22nd, 2018. And again, if you go to the MajorTaylorAssociation.org, you can get more information on this. And here's the little description here. See how fast you can pedal up George Street, a two-block quad buster that was a training ground for the 1899 world champion Major Taylor. It's one rider at a time against the clock in the steep uphill time trial in downtown Worcester. And it's presented by a local bike shop and also a local bike club called the Seven Hills Wheelmen, who just put on the Quabbin Reservoir ride, I do believe. On the fourth Sunday in July, the distance is 500 feet and the average grade is 18%. The contest is open to all riders age 12 and up. Helmets are required and proceeds benefit the Major Taylor Association Incorporated. So I just stumbled across this morning because I was sent an email at my Bicycle Talk numeral one Gmail account, and it was reminding me of the Major Taylor ride, which the Major Taylor race is coming up. So I'll announce this again at the end of the show. If you didn't get the date right, we can talk about that a little bit more later on. But anyway, it's kind of a cool thing. Major Taylor is a total legend. Unbelievably, wonderfully talented rider. Unfortunately, had some misfortune along the way, but he was killing it. There was nobody that could touch him back in the day. So that's pretty wild. Okay, so we got a few more things on the list here. So we've all heard about what's going on in politics out there right now, and there's been this whole trade war thing that's going on. Well, this is a huge problem in the bicycle industry, and the reason is because there's a tremendous amount of product that comes out of China. As a matter of fact, there's a tremendous amount of product that is not made here in the United States that is related towards the bicycle, because it's very difficult to be able to build things, products, etc., at a rate that most people can afford. So we import a lot. So anyway, it started. Here comes, welcome to the trade war. The Trump administration, has proposed adding e-bikes to the list of $50 billion in products from China subject to a 25% tariff. The industry is hustling to develop a lobbying plan while manufacturers explore options. Knowing my industry, they're not hustling fast enough, but that's what it is. So the first one is a 25% tariff on China-made e-bikes. This information, by the way, comes from Bicycle Retailer, which is an industry magazine that everyone who works in the bicycle industry is privy to. If you're press and you want to know more about that, I believe they will give you copies of it too, because there's a lot of interesting news in there. So Anyway, the U.S. bike industry has been drafted into the trade war between China and the U.S. Chinese-made e-bikes, which include bikes sold by Trek, Giant, Raleigh Electric, Pedego, and other brands, would be subject to a 25% tariff under the proposal released on Friday. The tariff, which would take effect in a matter of months, would increase the retail price of the bikes by hundreds of dollars, perhaps enough to make them uncompetitive with e-bikes made elsewhere and dampening interest in one of the bike industry's most promising sectors. Yeah, the e-bikes are a big deal. They're really coming around. They're putting a lot of people that used to ride bicycles back on their bicycles. They're putting a lot of people that really had no chance of ever getting themselves on a bicycle onto a bicycle. I can't say enough about them. I had the pleasure of being able to ride on a Copenhagen wheel a few weeks ago. It is a wheel that was developed in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and by, I believe, some MIT folks that left MIT after leaving MIT went to work on this. But I don't have the exact on that. I'm going to actually try to get someone from the Copenhagen wheel onto the show at some point in the future, because they have a very, very interesting product, which actually just you can put it on almost any bike, and it's really, really cool. So anyway, the electric bikes are included in a list of 284 product codes representing $16 billion in imports released by the Trump administration. The list will go through a public comment process, including public hearings, before the U.S. Trade Representative decide whether each product code should be subject to the tariff. The process is likely to take several months. So we're going to see another thing, too. Also on Friday, the USTR released a list of 818 product codes, including representing $34 billion in imports, and is already determined it will be hit with a 25% tariff starting in July. That list includes some bike GPS units, and there's going to be a GPS tariff out there. And I think I've got another click right here on that, and we're going to see this affecting cycling GPS units are on that list. And a dominant brand in GPS, Garmin, manufactures in Taiwan, so its products will not receive the tariff. But Lezyne and Brighton also manufacture in Taiwan. Stages Cycling, Wahoo Fitness, however, have their GPS units made in China. Stages executive is expecting his products to be slapped by the tariff starting on July 6th. Wahoo declined to comment for this story. So anyway, some things are happening. Things are happening out there. I'm looking at this as not as big a deal as if they really go after the bicycles, which is really going to cause a problem. But I'm sure it's on the hit list in the future. So it's certainly an issue. If you have a problem with it, if you're feeling like you want to do something about it, you're always the best route is to go and talk to your senators or congressmen, have a chat with them, write letters, get other people to write letters too. That's how we get things done. The more people they hear from, the more they pay attention to something. So I'll just throw that out there if you're looking to hopefully make some changes here. The other products that contain GPS, such as Fitbits and Apple Watch, are also bought under different HTS codes, and the Apple Watch, in any case, is made in Taiwan, and Fitbits are made in Singapore. So there are some things that you would think would be there, but they are not. Anyway, we got to keep our eyes open on this, and there will be more to follow. So that is another thing that I thought was interesting to talk about. I found another piece in here since we have a number of folks out there that are usually the more serious bike riders, the people who have discovered cycling and have come to the point. No offense to youngsters, because I love seeing young people coming into the sport. As a matter of fact, if you go to my Bicycle Talk Facebook page, you got to check out the post I put out. I just shared a post with somebody, and it shows this little four-year-old girl who's riding her bicycle down the road, and a big, huge semi-truck comes up from behind, and she looks over and waves and gives him a thumbs up, and it's like, it's worth it. it's worth it. Like I said, go check it out. It's on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. It's pretty cool. It's just a neat little clip. But for those of us who are not 4 years old and maybe are 40 or above, and I would qualify for that by a good 20 years or more. But anyway, how do you stay fit after 40? Because, you know, what happens is, you know, we get to a point in our lives where fitness is kind of a, you can kind of do it hit or miss up to a certain age. The best endurance cyclists in the world usually hit their peak somewhere between 28 and 35 years of age. So, you know, we've got, you know, those folks, they're in a different game. They're in a totally different world. That is their job. That is what they do. But for those of us who are just the average, we'll call it the average Joe or the average Jane that's out there, we've, you know, we got to start paying attention a lot more once you hit 40 because, you know, it's, I don't want to call it the precipice of middle age, but you know what? It's getting there, and it's where everything starts to go wrong. So I can attest to that. I could stay reasonably fit, although I did focus a lot of attention on it because I was still racing back in my 30s, but I could stay reasonably fit with less effort than I have to put out now. So anyway, so if you enjoy, you know, like running or cycling or playing soccer or tennis or anything like that, you can usually push yourself to a physical limit a couple times a week and still have energy to crawl around and do the things that you need to do. I note crawl around. Okay. So if you look at this from the pro aspect of things, it's very rare that you're going to see a professional cyclist continue to be competitive and stay in the game after 40. It's just really, really hard. You're competing against 23-year-olds. You're competing against, you know, people that have just, it's a different game. The only thing that we have as old guys is the fact that sometimes we're a little smarter than they are. But you got to use that smart, and boy, I got to tell you, when you're jumping on a young guy's wheel and you're just hanging on for dear life, you know it if you're out there. You know what I'm talking about. It can be a very, I don't know, intimidating position to be in, because you're going to work really, really hard to stay there. And then the other point is you got to sort of put on a little bit of a game face and not let the kid that you're sitting on his wheel know that you're hurting that bad, because they'll just let you go. So you got to be smart about it. And we hopefully are whenever we can be, and that's kind of what you do. But at the same time, you have to watch out that you don't overdo it. And, you know, just like I call it blowing a gasket. You don't want to push yourself so hard that you just completely blow up. That's not a good thing. So you want to periodize your regime. The importance of periodizing and risks of not doing so, It's so incredible. If you're an elite athlete, periodizing can mean creating a structured program of building up and tapering that yields peak fitness at a precise time. For your average person, it's more about the principles: ramping up the training gradually, preparing your body for specific demands to avoid and avoiding fatigue. And so if you're and it also requires you to take that fabulously delicate ego and understand that you can put it away, you can put it on the shelf and leave it behind, and not go out and push yourself super hard if you're nursing an injury. You know, you can't do that anymore. That's the problem with over 40. Over 40, now we're talking about, you know, if you've got an injury, you have to pay special attention to that injury. You got to make sure that you are not creating more of an injury because you're pushing yourself past the pain. And you may know how to push yourself past the pain because maybe you raced for a while. Maybe you understand what it's like to live in the pain cave. And you know that, you know, I can do this. I know I can do this for an hour. I can hold on to this. I've got it. You know, put the ego away. Just shelve it. It's you're done. That's it. There's no use for it. There's no need for it. You're really, you know, train smart. Be smart when you're riding your bike. Don't kill yourself out there. We want to really emphasize recovery after 40. you know, strength coaches talk about loading and unloading, and that the former should always be followed by the latter. And so when you think of unloading for non-lifters, you may mean like yoga, foam rolling, ice tubing, ice tubbing, running in water or meditating. It encompasses both recovery and a range of motion work that prevents all sorts of movement limitations and compensations that can build up over time and lead to injuries. So this is a funny story, because the article here says that this person used to consider happy hour a valid cool down routine. No, not good. Now he says he's a fanatic about stretching and self-massage, and he has a closet full of straps, bands, foam rollers, and lacrosse balls to show for it. Committing to this is tough if your schedule is packed, which you could be, it would tempt you to extend your workout and skip the stretching. That's a bad trade-off. You know, I'm still teaching indoor cycling this time of year. I teach all year round. And at the end of my class, I have a routine, which we go through, which really goes after all the little tight spots that you would develop if you were doing the high intensity workout that I'm teaching. So, you know, spend the time, do the stretching. It's good for you. It'll be a lot better for you in the long run. Last night, I'm involved with a yoga person, the yoga teacher. And we share a class, we call it SPOGA. It's half hour of spinning, half hour of yoga. And I got to tell you, when I get done with the yoga, I mean, the spin part is just, you know, it's just yet another spinning class that I'm teaching. And I bring everybody in, I put them through, you know, a high intensity short piece, you're warmed up, we cool down, it's just a half an hour, it's pretty quick, it's over with very quickly. Enough for most of the people to look at me like I'm some sort of, you know, horrible, evil person that is torturing them. But for me, it's great because I warm up my muscles, I get them feeling really good, I cool back down again, and then we do a half an hour of yoga. And I got to tell you, it's great because I am stretching and relaxing in ways that I don't normally do it. And it really, really works out. And I just feel great because of it. I slept so good last night after that. It really calms your body down. It calms down your brain. It calms down a lot of things. So I'm a big believer in the whole yoga thing, even though I again, I have to leave my ego at home on that one, too, because I am not good at it at all. It is very difficult for me. I have many, many years of working out really hard, of racing, and I'm real tight. And who needs yoga more than me? Not many. I really need it bad. But boy, I've become so relaxed in that class that one night I actually fell asleep at the very end. And they had to come over and give me a little nudge because I had nodded off on the floor. But anyway, that's how relaxing it can be. It's really good. It's great for your body. Oh my God, it's so good for your body. The other thing you want to pay attention to is you want to eat for muscle. Okay, if you're eating a healthy diet, lots of fruits, vegetables, proteins, and whole grains, and not much sugar or processed stuff, you're probably fine. But if you want to avoid losing muscle as you age, it's worth it to make a couple of tweaks. You might want to increase protein in your diet, as well as, you know, you want to try to at least consume it during the day and just get some protein in there. So if you want an oatmeal cookie, chocolate chip cookie without feeling a sugar crash, you also can smear some almond butter on it, maybe some peanut butter, whatever it is, because you can get a little bit of protein with that too. If you're not allergic to dairy, you can make a smoothie with milk products, or you can use whey protein. That works really well too. So anyway, other things you need to look at. You want to sweat the small stuff like this. So athletes with a history of injury or physical limitations, which is pretty much all of us eventually, the key to optimal fitness is separating desirable training stresses from undesirable ones. If you have access to any particular cool things like anti-gravity things and all that, so you can flip yourself upside down and do that, that's great. But instead of adding weight to any exercise, you want to incorporate more of a balance element, like doing push-ups, maybe doing some planks, doing things that are with a resistance band around your knees, doing some squats. Use your body to do your work, and it'll help you stay flexible, it'll keep you strong, and it'll really, really work on your balance. So, and you can always try some new skills. You might want to try something new, maybe participate in a different sport. I would say be very careful about this, because you really need to pay attention to the fact that when you are really fit because you've been riding your bike a lot, and then you jump into another sport, let's call it running because that's the classic, your muscles are going to be good for being able to put the effort out. Your cardiovascular system is going to be great for putting the effort out. But let me tell you, your joints and your attachments are going to be very, very unhappy with you. And you can hurt yourself very easily because you can basically run faster than your body is ready to handle. So be careful with that. Just be really careful. So I'm a big, big believer of walking, because I think that walking gives me a few things that I don't get when I'm on my bike. One is it's a load exercise. So it's a weight bearing exercise, and it's something you don't get when you're on your bike, because you're on your bike, because your bike is supporting you. So if you can go for a walk, you can get a lot out of it. And if you've got, you know, a friend or a significant other that isn't a cyclist, then go for a walk together. Do that instead. Just spend a little time, get a nice conversation in, see some cool things, and definitely check it out. Check it out for sure. So staying fit after 40, that's definitely a challenge. I'm going to add to that, staying fit after 50 is also a challenge, maybe getting a little deeper into the challenge. And staying fit after 60 is extremely challenging. So that is the life I am living right here. And it's been an interesting journey. It really has. The big thing I have to worry about more than anything else is I have to worry about the injury, joint issues, that sort of thing. Because, you know, you start using things up a little bit. You start wearing things out. It happens. It's just a matter of life, and it's a matter of how things go. But then again, my good friend Saul, he's going to be riding his bicycle this year, 91 kilometers for his 91st birthday. So you can do this for a very, very long time. As a matter of fact, little shout out to Saul. He has arranged it with a local ice cream place, and all of our rides this weekend are going to converge on this local ice cream place. And Saul, who should not be doing this because it's his birthday, we should be doing this for him. He's buying everyone ice cream. So we're all going to do it to celebrate Saul's 91st. And anyway, it's a cool thing. It's definitely a very cool thing. I want to talk a little bit today also about a greenway which is being improved and getting very close to completion, called the Charter Oak Greenway in Connecticut. If you are local here and you understand this, it runs along the edge of Route 384 and from Bolton down to East Hartford, basically Manchester East Hartford area. And it has been there for a very long time. It's a paved path. It's very nice. Kind of winds around back and forth. There are some hills on it, but it's protected and it's paved. It's very nice. And on the western end of the Charter Oak Greenway, a spur has been completed linking East Hartford's Great River Park to Main Street. So it goes right into Main Street, East Hartford, which is Route 5, which is very, very close to the Connecticut River, which is cool. And the trail runs from the southern end of the park from a bridge across the Hocknum River to the Connecticut River Academy underneath Route 2, which is also very close to the river, and to Main Street. Paved paths now link to the Charter Oak Greenway off of Silver Lane in East Hartford. And now they're working on an extension of the Charter Oak Greenway. And they have here that it's expected to be completed by November of 2018. The bridge is in. They paved the bridge. Or they're doing something on it. It looks like it's almost complete. The one at the very end that hooks up to the Hop River Trail. It's going to extend. It's part of the whole Greenways project, which goes from Maine down to Florida. So it's a very, very exciting time right now. I had heard the possibility of a ribbon cutting sometime this month, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen or not because they have been running behind on this project for a bit. But anyway, it's a cool thing. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to traillink.com and you can look up Charter Oak Greenway in Connecticut. And you'll see that it's just it's a really cool idea. What it does is it's going to now connect far points of eastern Connecticut to Hartford. That's the way this goes. So it's a cool thing. It's very exciting. It's in our backyard. And, you know, if you're visiting Connecticut and you want to check it out, you should come out and look at it. Check it out. Take your bike on it. Ride it for a little bit. See what goes on. If you ride from Hartford and you head east on it and pick up the Hop River Trail, which then hooks onto the Airline Trail, that'll bring you all the way out to Pomfret Station in Pomfret. It's a very, very long ride. So you could really spend a good day on it. It's that long. A lot of the trail when you get into the eastern parts is dirt. It is not paved, but it is very well maintained and has a nice crushed stone dust over it, which is very hard packed and easy to ride on. So that's a cool thing. We rode on Sunday. We got a chance to ride out to from our house. We're about 2 miles away from one of the trailheads, and we rode up to Hampton and over into the Natchog Forest, which is the second largest state forest in the state of Connecticut, has primarily dirt roads on it. So we did a dirt road ride, and it involved just about 27 miles by the time we were done. So it was pretty cool. It's definitely a cool thing to do. I took some friends out there who had never been there before, and they were just blown away by how beautiful it was. The mountain laurels out in full bloom. It's gorgeous. It was all covered with, you know, the trees just go over the top of the trail because there are no power lines. So therefore, there's no reason to trim anything back. So you're riding through this beautiful green canopy. And it was a very hot day, and it wasn't hot on that. So anyway, Charter Oak Greenway, if you get a chance or you're visiting Connecticut, you want to check it out, you should definitely look at that. If you're coming to Connecticut, you want to check anything out in eastern Connecticut, email me, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Peddlin' Ron would love to take you out and show you my world because it's a pretty cool world out here. It's a whole lot of fun. It's really made for cycling. So the person that I rode with, very interesting, Matt, shout out to Matt and Randy, by the way. Thanks for coming. We had a great time last weekend. Matt and Randy have ridden all over the world. They've ridden in a number of different places. They've ridden in Europe. They've ridden all over the world. Let's just leave it at that. And they went on this ride, and they got done. And Randy looked at me, and she said, "This is the most beautiful ride I've ever been on." and it's like, oh, it can't be that. And then Matt chimed in. You know, I have people ask me all the time because they know we ride our bikes all over the place. And he said they always ask him, "So what's your favorite place to ride your bike?" And his answer is Connecticut. Eastern Connecticut, Western Connecticut, the central region in some places, even down near the shore in some places. Really quiet, really beautiful, great roads. Yeah, there's hills. We have hills. There's no question about that. But it is really, really beautiful, and it's really cyclist heaven out here. It really is. So, anyway, a few more comments here that I have for the show. And one is that this weekend, June 21st through the 24th, which 21st is actually tomorrow, through the 24th in Knoxville, Tennessee, we have the USA Cycling Road and Time Trial and Criterium National Championships. I think it's a time trial in there too. Hang on here. I got this right here. Yes, it is. Individual time trial. So this is the men's race. The elite men's individual time trial is on June 21st, and it's 34.2 kilometers. The women's time trial is also on the 21st. It is 22.8 kilometers. The elite men's criterium is on the 22nd. It is a 90K criterium. The elite women's criterium is on the 22nd. It is a 75K criterium. And the elite men's road race on the 24th is 193.1 kilometers, and the elite women's road race is 115.8 kilometers, also on June 24th, both those being on June 24th. So those are coming up. If you're interested at all in bicycle racing and the national championships, it is happening this weekend, USA Cycling Road Individual Time Trial and Criterium National Championships for 2018 in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm sure that there's probably going to be some television coverage on this. I know that the NBC Sports Network has been pretty good about doing this in the past. So if you're a subscriber, you might be able to see it there. But you do need to check your local listings to see if you can actually watch it on TV. And, you know, you can kind of check that out. That's a pretty cool event. The other thing that's going on, or just was going on, let's put it that this is the time of year when we're just before the Tour de France. And so the pro riders, they usually choose between the Criterium du Dauphine and the Tour de Suisse. So the Tour de Dauphine is June 3rd through the 10th, and the Tour de Suisse June 9th through the 17th. So the Tour of Switzerland is kind of the big boy. That one tends to attract a lot of attention and brings in some interesting people. This year it brought in Richie Porte and Nairo Quintana and Mikel Landa and, let's see, Bauke Mollema from Trek. And it's got mountainous terrain, and they test their legs against one another. It's not a very long tour, but it is long enough to give you a tune-up for the Tour of France. So it's a 9-day race, and it's very similar to any of the big grand tours, because it starts out with a team time trial or a regular time trial, and then finishes, you know, usually on the other end there's either a time trial or a criterium type finish on the other end. So anyway, we have results, and Richie Porte, who had ridden for Team Sky for a number of years, he's now riding for BMC, I believe. He was the grand winner as of, I think, yesterday or the day before is when they finished this off. So the closest rider to him was Jakob Fuglsang, and he's from Denmark, and he was a minute and 2 seconds behind him. Nairo Quintana was a minute and 12 seconds behind him. I'm just looking to see if there's any other names in here that were jumping out. Nothing in particular. Anyway, it looks like Richie Porte's sitting in a good place as far as his fitness goes right now, so he could be setting himself up pretty good for the Tour de France. Speaking of the Tour de France, we've got a listing of people who are on the favorites list of the Tour de France. And, of course, it's Richie Porte, Chris Froome, Tom Dumoulin, and Vincenzo Nibali. They're among the 2018 Tour de France credits. So there's going to be, it should be an interesting race. Chris Froome's looking to do a back-to-back. Not many people have done a back-to-back, but Eddie Merckx, Jacques Anquetil, Bernard Hinault, I believe Bernard Hinault, that may not be right. But anyway, Fran did this last week. She actually looked it up for me, and now I don't have that information in front of me. But the Eddie Merckx, Jacques Anquetil, Bernard Hinault, and Miguel Indurain are all 5-time tour winners, and that is what Chris Froome is looking to do. So he's currently commanding the odds of 6-4 over the 2018 race, although some bookies have shifted their odds to make the Brit an odds on, whatever that is. I'm not a betting man, so I don't know a whole lot about it. But behind Froome, Tom Dumoulin is edging out Richie Porte as the second favorite, although Richie Porte's, he's right on the top of his game right now. He's looking good. So, and he's, you know, he's pretty fresh, and it wasn't a real long stage race. So his 9th stage race, kind of perfect timing, because he didn't play in any of the other big races, and Dumoulin did, and so did Froome. So, you know, this is a numbers game. Nairo Quintana, again, another one to take a look at. I always love watching him. He's one of the kind of an odd way to put this, but kind of one of the prettier riders on a bicycle. He's really got a great look. He just looks comfortable on his bike. He can climb. He's small. He's just, you know, I have a soft spot for the climbers that just look like they belong on the bike and make it look so easy. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. So we've also got some other riders coming in. Landa is coming to the Movie Star from Team Sky. And there's also the Team Sky's backup option looks to be Geraint Thomas, although the Welshman's odds vary anything from 33-1 to 66-1. So, you know, we'll see. Other British interests can be found in the Yates twins. You know, again, we'll have to see. Simon was doing great until a couple of days before the end of the Giro, and then he just exploded. So that was that. And that can happen. This is hard stuff. This is crazy, crazy hard stuff. So we'll see what happens. It should be an interesting Tour de France this year. I'm looking forward to seeing how that's all going to pan out. There's another piece I wanted to bring in here, a little more bike racing here. Sorry, folks, if you're not as big a bike racing fan as I am, but there's I saw this and it's just everywhere I look, I keep getting the same interesting news being thrown at me. And we're going to talk a little bit about Froome and the Vuelta. So last year, as you know, Chris Froome ended up they found out long after the Vuelta was over that he was having a little bit of a problem with salbutamol. He supposedly had doubled the dosage in him for his asthma. He's got exercise-induced asthma, therefore he has a waiver to be able to use it, but he was using way more than he should have. And of course, the folks who put on the Vuelta are just not real happy with that. So they're still trying to figure out exactly what to do here. And the race director, Javier Gulian, has called for a resolution to the Chris Froome case before the start of the 2018 edition on August 25th. So anyway, Froome won last year's Vuelta, but risks being stripped of the title after returning positive tests for salbutamol following stage 18. So anyway, we've had some discussion on the show about this before, what it's all about. When the lovely Fran is here, she can give you the whole scientific parts to it and how it all works. But it is a steroid and it does help out. And there's a point where you are taking it because you have a medical issue and you need to take it, or are you taking it because you figured out a way to falsify a medical reason to take it? And then, of course, if you take a little more than normal, you get a little more than normal benefits from it. So it's a tough story. It's a tough subject to work with. But it's there, and it's always in discussion. So there's a lot going on there. They want a resolution on it before the end of, they want a resolution on it before the Vuelta begins again this year. That's the other thing, too. I don't know if Froome, did he win the Vuelta any other time? Again, I need the lovely Fran here to be looking this up as I'm asking questions. If you know that, you can always send it over to me. But if he gets stripped of the Vuelta, then he gets stripped of that Triple Crown too, because there's only a few riders who have ever won all three races: the Vuelta, the Giro, and the Tour de France. So that would be interesting if that's what happens. We shall just have to wait and see. That's all there is to it. So anyway, coming up, we have some upcoming events that are here. And so we should probably talk a little bit about those as we clean up the show, because we are getting very, very close to the end of the show here. So it's happening. Anyway, just... Okay, so... upcoming events we have, I had mentioned earlier, I talked about Major Taylor, and so we've got that coming up on July 22nd, 2018. It's the 16th edition of the George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. And of course, the other thing that I mentioned was this weekend, and I'll mention this again, is the Seven Lakes Ride. It's a beautiful ride, by the way. It is gorgeous. Why is it Seven Lakes Ride? Because you go by Seven Lakes. Hello. That's kind of obvious. But anyway, it's a great ride. It's put on by our good friends at Nearec Earth. We love you guys. You're really good for cycling. We really think you're lovely for that. The ride starts and begins at Stafford High School in Stafford Springs. There's, of course, a 20, a 25, a 45, and a 62-mile route to choose from. The 62-mile ride travels through the charming rural towns of Willington, Ashford, Woodstock, and then heads up to the quaint southeastern Massachusetts towns of Sturbridge, Holland, Wales, before turning back into Union, Staffordville, and Stafford. So anyway, some really, really pretty roads, really, really great ride. Hoping for a good weekend for those folks this weekend, so that should be a nice thing. The Seven Lakes Ride. Check it out. And you want to find out more about that, of course, go to sevenlakesride.com. Or is it .org? Excuse me. On July 28th, another local ride in the area, Thread City Century Ride. You want to see the roads that we're always bragging about out here? Come check it out. It's the Thread City Cyclers, and they're putting on a century ride at the Edward Garrison Park in Chaplin. And this is August. So anyway, that's July 18th, and there are a variety of rides. It's not just a 100-mile ride. There are some other rides available, too. Saturday, August 18th, is the Steeplechase Bike Tour, and you can find out more about that at steeplechasebiketour.org, and that's all one word. Calling all cyclists and walkers, families, and friends to join us for a ride walk. Meet us at Eastern Connecticut State University Athletic Complex, rain or shine. Choose from 5 different scenic routes or a 5-mile walk and ride. So there are a few changes this year. There's going to be, I am involved with routes on this, so I have been employed to come up with an alternative 20-mile ride, which will be using the rail trail that I talk about all the time because it's a very safe place for families. So it's kind of a cool thing. Another thing way up in the future here, but I'm going to mention it right now because we did have these folks on the show a while back, and we had this really big event in Hartford over the winter time. So registration is now open for exhibitors, builders for the next year North American Handmade Bicycle Show, which is going to be held in Sacramento Convention Center in Sacramento, California, March 15th through the 17th. Pretty cool event. A lot of fun to go to. If you've never been to it before, I'm telling you, it's a great event to go to. It's fascinating. If you're a bike geek and you like to drool, you're going to drool a lot. Bring a towel. Bring a towel because it's definitely a very, very cool event. So we want to check that out, too. This is it. My name is Pedlin Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk without my co-host, the lovely Tran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this live or on podcast, and you'd like to comment or send me an email, it's bicycletalk, @gmail.com. And you can also listen to more past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or on iTunes. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show or be on the show as a guest, please send me an email to bicycletalk, @gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs.